You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, Radio Albion. This is the Daily Nationalist, and today's date is the 29th of October, 2025. I want to note for many of you that if you have young kids, I think that you should enjoy Halloween. I have some great memories when I was a kid. Don't listen to these crazy Protestants. Never be afraid of any of these things. We shouldn't be afraid of anything. I had fun as a kid. Don't listen to these characters. I think it's a little bit too regulated today. We trick-or-treated whenever we wanted to. But don't allow the Protestants to tell you whether, you know, that this is a terrible thing. It is not a terrible thing. I am, I guess, about 95% as of right now. Having been in the hospital for 4.5 days, some of you may know that, some of you might not. Stanley, the cat, very famous cat. My Stanley's brother, Marcel, has mouth cancer. And we have to work on that. We caught it early. You know, he's not in any pain. He has excellent appetite. You know, he's his normal self. So I think we caught it, but I don't know. We have to get an operation. And this is part of being a pet owner. You know, they're part of the family, whether you like it or not. And in my case, I like it very much. However, cancer is something indirectly related to what we're going to talk about here, something that's been out of the news for many years. And I say it's time for it to be back in the news, because I think it's quite relevant. We're talking about Israeli weapons of mass destruction, specifically the crash of LL Flight 1862. Now, this took place near Amsterdam's Schiphol Airport. Schiphol, of course, is a suburb of Amsterdam. Roughly around 6:25 p.m., October 4th, 1992, LL Flight LY-1862, this flight was in trouble. Remember, cargo planes are, you know, they're kind of retired passenger planes, so they're usually a little older. They discovered that engine 3 was on fire. Worse, it had broken free of the wing, and then as it separated, took engine 4 along with it. Captain Yitzhak Fuchs said that we're going down. That was his last message. And it was a Boeing 747-200 smashed into a block, tenement block, in an area called Balmer, the outskirts of Amsterdam, killing all three crewmen, an identified passenger, no one knows who that passenger was, and about 43 people on the ground. Now, we say about because we don't really know how many. Many of the victims were illegal immigrants. So, you know, silver lining. The Irish Times mentioned, they used the word scythe as a verb. The LL plane scythed through the top of 5 stories, 2 buildings, 40 flats took a direct hit. Then a huge fireball rolled through the complex, and apartment after apartment popped into flames. A giant cloud of choking white smoke engulfed the area. And that struck everyone. There shouldn't be white smoke here. Since then, say over the next 5 years, mid-90s, about 850 bomber survivors, including residents, cops, rescue workers, whatever, have come down with many diseases. Many breathing problems, hair loss, all kinds of neurological ailments, mental confusion, depression. encephalomyelitis, which is the inflammation of the brain and the spinal cord, and extreme arthritis, various kinds of joint pain. And they consistently ascribe their illnesses to the crash. Now, for some strange reason, as this plane went down and the white smoke came up, El Al officials, El Al, of course, the official airline of Israel, went into a bit of a panic. You had Israeli officials, you had Dutch officials and bureaucrats assured the public that the flight was harmless. It carried nothing but perfume and light articles, gift articles. At the time, the Israeli transport minister was Shaul Yahalom, and he said that there were no dangerous materials on that plane, and Israel has nothing to hide. No one really asked if he had anything to hide, but he said it anyway. Of course, Israel always has something to hide. The whole existence of Zionism is hiding things. Their whole world is deceit. Well, it took 6 years. Finally, the denials collapsed. This is one of the very few times that journalists actually did their job, at least for a while. Dutch newspaper, NRC, Handelsblad, printed someone leaked a page from the cargo manifest. Because these El Al planes going over Amsterdam, this is a New York to Tel Aviv flight and then back again. These are secret. Now, flight 1862 had 10 tons of chemicals. And it was an interesting list of chemicals. It had hydrofluoric acid, isopropanol, and something very important, dimethylmethylphosphonate, DMMP. Those of you who know chemistry realize that that can make sarin nerve gas. Now, where did the DMMP come from? It came from Pennsylvania. It came from a place called Solcatronic Chemicals, Marsville, PA. After a bunch of accidents, they shut their doors in 1998, thank God. But this particular shipment was going somewhere particularly nasty. I think the Iranians have shut it down by now, but it's the Israeli Institute for Biological Research, IIBR. It's a suburb of Tel Aviv, Nes Ziona. Even Wikipedia says, this institute is widely suspected of being involved in developing chemical and biological weapons. Well, they're right. Now, DMMP is a tightly controlled substance. But the Department of Commerce, who grants the license, grants the Israelis and Solcatronic routinely, you know, when they existed, a license to ship it. In fact, immediately after that initial shipment went up in flames, the Balmer crash, the same Commerce Department quickly authorized a replacement shipment. Jewish author named Maon Rabiani, he wrote in Middle East International. He describes the Institute as the Israeli military and intelligence community's front organization for the development, testing, and production of chemical and biological weapons. It was IIBR that provided the poison, that is, the antidote as well, used in the attempted assassination of Hamas leader in Jordan in 1998. Now, he's referring to Khalid Mashal, who was still alive. He was Hamas' political bureau chief for a long time. And by the way, the assassination was 1997, not 1998, and the attempt failed. He's still alive today. A former biologist for that institution told the London Sunday Times back in 1998, he said, there is hardly a single known or unknown form of chemical or biological weapon which is not manufactured at this institute. In fact, today, it's so secretive, I shouldn't even say today, because I have the feeling that it's been wiped off the map. But this institute is so secretive that it does not appear on any maps, and it's off limits to even members of the Knesset. Today, it's not on the maps because Iran has wiped it out, I think. Now, Israel's lies, I think, are always designed to insult it. I mean, they're always really bad. They're stupid. Here's what they said. They would deny that there was anything bad, then they would explain why it's something bad, and then go back again. Israel maintained at the time, oh, maybe there were chemicals like that on there, but, you know, they were there to test gas masks. Which is, you know, it's not even a good lie. Because it needs a tiny amount to conduct such tests. And you don't even need something as severe as sarin gas to test them anyway. But in combination, what was found on, or what was found discovered on flight 1862 could have produced about 200 pounds of sarin. They could have probably wiped out Amsterdam. The Dutch press did pursue the bomber story at great professional cost. A man named Vincent Dekker, he comes up again. He's a reporter for something called Die Pro. Interviewed, I don't know, maybe 100 Amsterdam police officers who said that they had been assisted by rescue specialists who came in French licensed cars, they had French license plates, but France never sent any rescue crews. There was a very large Mossad base in Paris. But of course, ritualistically, you know, they deny any kind of involvement. Ultimately, there was 126 tons of freight abroad the entire flight. Alal then finally admits, you know, they went back and forth. They lie so normally. It's just, but Alal refused to supply information on the 6 tons of military cargo. Shipboat cargo handlers told reporters the plane had been loaded with 7 pallets of unspecified munitions. In fact, this could have been much worse because over the last few years, it's been discovered that there was about 83 tons of, within 83 tons that was iffy, there was quite a bit of oil industry explosives. But it got worse than this because the Dutch press, again, doing their job, I can't believe it. Now, this is pre-internet. They asked, why were the 12 hours of videotape made during the rescue and cleanup operations, with 42 VHS tapes and all, they were all shredded and destroyed. All the police audio tapes were destroyed. Government took LL documents. They're all gone. The black box is gone. And it's not every day. The American Flight Safety Foundation said that the possibility has to be considered that the CVR, or the black box, was stolen from the area. Well, in the area that was actually, you know, affected by the crash, a few groups were organized. They came under immediate attack by the Israelis and became a kind of an NGO in their own right. They were able to hire a few investigators who knew their chemistry. A lot of toxic chemicals were found there. You had traded a lot of uranium, zirconium, and lanthanum. That's a rare earth metal, by the way, La-57. Turned up in all the soil samples taken from the crash site and in fecal samples taken from survivors. Now, I didn't know this. I have to admit I can't believe this, that back then, well, right up until, I think, 1981, Boeing 747s carried, and the amount, no one has the same amount, roughly, at least according to El Al, over 3,000 pounds of depleted uranium on board in the form of the cadmium-clad counterweights hidden in the aircraft's tail, the fins, but also in the stabilizers and wings. I never knew this. Depleted uranium, of course, is very dense. It's actually a byproduct of U-235. That's the fissionable isotope used to manufacture nuclear weapons. It's what's left over, right? Fission being a reaction where the nucleus can be split into two or more smaller nuclei, and that produces gamma radiation, in our case. Nevertheless, depleted uranium contains a certain amount, a tiny amount of U-235, and less radioactive, like 238, 236. But I had no idea, you know, this was the norm, that they used depleted uranium in all DC-10, 747s, and I think it was slowly phased out roughly in 1981, being replaced by a tungsten, which makes a lot more sense. But it's true. I've never heard of anyone after a plane crash, someone says, oh, wait, be careful, there's all this depleted uranium everywhere. We've got to get the depleted uranium out of the tail. I never heard anyone mention that whatsoever in any plane crash, even if it's in the center of a city. Not one time. I've ever heard anyone say, oh my God, get rid of that DU or something like that. Never heard it. It's a totally brand new discovery for me that Boeing and all the major airlines used depleted uranium in huge amounts, coated in nickel, sometimes cadmium, to protect it and to keep it from, you know, some people say it doesn't burn. It does burn. Or the other way around. No, actually, it does burn. Or it doesn't burn. Or it doesn't burn easily. No one knows. People know, but the Israelis were saying it didn't matter. People were blaming the depleted uranium for a lot of the illnesses. You know, they went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Very typical. Well, whatever the amount, and it's not the massive amounts, though. What, 3,000 pounds? Claimed by LL? No. No, usually it's not near that amount. It's not near that amount. But LL says it was. Well, clearly there's something else going on here. They can't even agree if it burns or not. At no plane crash site. Is anyone worried about DU? I've never heard this before. I've never heard such a thing. I can't believe it. However, the lie that there was something like, you know, it's normal to have like thousands of pounds of this stuff. This was a lie that was created to defend Israel's reputation under the circumstances. This was an incredible embarrassment. And we're going to talk a lot more about this here. In 1994, the end of 1994, a Boeing document, which was not meant for the public, was found that said for many years, aircraft manufacturers have used depleted uranium to balance ailerons, rudders, elevators, you know, all that kind of thing, typical. However, it also says that in a crash, that kind of dust, which is very possible, can be spread everywhere, can cause significant, long-lasting irradiation of internal tissue. But that really wasn't the issue. Israel would love to have blamed the DU on that. No, it was more than that. Now, the counterweights made from this were come from nuclear metals. It was manufacturer of the StarMet Corporation, 1997, also closed its doors in 99. One of the leading suppliers of low-cost DU ammunition for U.S. government weapon systems. Then it also said, way back, that it was the FAA-approved facility for these DU counterweights. Now, another Pennsylvania company. I don't get this. By the way, just outside Philadelphia, because, you know, if you want to build, you know, uranium, depleted uranium items, you do it in the middle of a city. And it's now a toxic Superfund site, as they call it, you know, contaminated land. About a $7 million effort to remove 28 years' worth, more than that, of radioactive sludge in the area containing about 175 tons of depleted uranium. Has anyone heard of this before? Well, it's true. StarMet, of course, no longer exists. But they also said at the time that tail fin counterweights could oxidize rapidly in a long-lasting fire. It has to be above 500 degrees centigrade. The Battelle Laboratory says they have to say like an hour-long fire, it could vaporize it. Maybe 4 to 20% of the depleted uranium. And with all the turbulence and big fire, that incineration could reach 30%. So I guess it does burn. Now the inferno at Balmer got up to about 1,400 degrees centigrade. The Nature magazine, not too long afterwards, worst case 747 crash can expose maybe 500,000 people to health risks from inhaling uranium oxide particles. Now the Dutch government stated that the counterweights remained intact and never posed a threat to health. Now, the Laca Foundation, who apparently specializes in this kind of thing, said only 360 pounds of the 1,000 pounds of depleted uranium aboard the downed 747 had been recovered. It was Laca's, you know, this is kind of a corporate NGO. They had disclosed this. No one had known this before. And this is one of the things that led to the full Dutch parliamentary inquiry. And the Balmer hearings were a big deal at the time. I don't particularly remember them. But apparently it was. In 1992 and 93, I was just finishing college, starting grad school. These were chaired by the Christian Democratic Opposition, Theo Meyer. And it was a big deal. In fact, it was so intense. And so many people had been killed in this area and people were sick that there was even a number that was flashing on the screen for psychological counseling or for something. But throughout all this time, every Sunday night, mysterious LL cargo flights routinely landed at the airport, Schiphol from New York to Tel Aviv, and vice versa. They were never displayed on any airport arrival monitors. There was no documentation for these flights. Everything was secret. And the cargo on these flights was never inspected, ever at any time. Now, January 29, 1999, the Attorney General, Dutch Attorney General, Vraking was his name, testified. These hearings were a long time, big deal. Testified that the LL security detachment to Schiphol airport was Mossad. It was simply a branch of the Mossad. On February 5th, Dutch Air Guidance Organization employee told the hearing that the policy since 1973 was to keep quiet about all LL activity throughout the airport. They testified that LL planes were never inspected by customs or the Dutch Flight Safety Board. Two technical maintenance officers also testified, told the committee that the supervisor would order them to clear LL flights for takeoffs when they were not comfortable that it was safe to do so. They testified a 25-page maintenance sheet for Flight 1862 had all kinds of problems that had not been corrected. In other words, they were simply waving them through. And of course, the obvious question was why? Yeah, it turns out this goes back to the 50s. Now, these kind of chemicals, especially the way that they were being shipped, would be a violation of the Chemical Weapons Treaty. Because they were using commercial airfields rather than NATO airfields. All the Atlantic Alliance's and military treaties are violated. As it turns out, Henkter Vanderbilt, who was an investigator working on behalf of the Bijlmer survivors and their organization, and I'm quoting him here, Schiphol has become a hub for secret weapons transfers. Dutch authorities have no jurisdiction over Israeli activities at the airport, their own airport. This is one of several European airports that allows LLs to transfer cargo without supervision. I think the Belgian television said that Belgian politicians are now worried that the Holland crash of 1992 is possible in Belgium because their airport, Zaventem, I think it's called, is under full control by the secret police of Israel. And that's a direct quote from Meyer, from the Meyer Committee. That committee, by the end of February 1999, they found secret tapes of phone conversations between LL and the air traffic control there. There's tapes recorded minutes after the crash, hidden in a safe for more than 6 years afterwards. There's an LL employee who says, there's poison on board that plane. There's ammunition and flammable liquids. Air traffic controllers are heard promising, we will keep this under wraps. The Dutch authorities ordered workers to clean up the contaminated area without any protective clothing, just to maintain the lie. For 6 years, Israel, the Dutch, NATO, the EU, the US, said the only things that were on that plane, that cargo plane, were video recorders, flowers, and perfume. That's what they said. After the hidden tape surfaced, the Labour Prime Minister, and Wim Kok, suspended three SATC, or the air traffic control, suspended three employees for withholding information. In fact, several ministers were threatened with firing. Israel finally, after many years, handed over the top secret information of the 20 tons of missing cargo from that LL flight. Just 1 week earlier, though, the Israelis said that those papers are probably destroyed. They eventually then hand those probably destroyed papers over. The report was about 2,000 pages long. And it stated that there was a direct link between health complaints and the disaster itself. It accused the health and transport ministers of providing unclear, incomplete, late, or simply incorrect information. Then, the Meyer report blasted Israel's cover-up. They said this cover-up is incomprehensible, especially given the public concern in the Netherlands over the last 6 years, the request for cooperation at the high diplomatic level, and a bond of friendship between the Netherlands and Israel is at stake. Today, the Laka Foundation says that LL is still flying the same routes. Calls for controls over now, what's it been, over 30 years? No one has any idea what's going overhead in that city. 10 years after the initial crash, so what, 2002? There was, and this, you know, every once in a while this comes up over there. And of course, you know, you can't use passenger planes, it's more stringent, so they use air cargo planes. Air cargo planes, as I said, are usually, you know, retired passenger planes, so they tend to be a little older. But the only information, the only source of information on the plane's cargo is pilot notification. The Dutch government, again, like they have on everything else, have gone back and forth. They eventually, despite their own report, under Israeli pressure, denied any connection between the Balmer residents and their complaints and the disaster. I mean, thousands of people inhaled these poisonous gases from the burning airplane, the apartment building, and everything else. We still don't know the full amount of the cargo. We know the sarin element, there's no doubt. But that Boeing aircraft carried 75 tons, kerosene, 10 tons of all of these chemicals, usually for military nature. 100 pounds of depleted uranium counterweights are missing. Because the very sensitive cargo aboard the doomed aircraft, that's the name of the book, by the way, the doomed flight, I think it's called. These investigations, since 92, have been normally shrouded in secrecy. And they have been, usually they're manipulative, using misinformation. Now these, specifically, this is actually a special bilateral agreement between the Netherlands and Israel. It comes from the Yom Kippur War. Israeli, the El Al was given special status at the Schiphol airport. Uses the airport, they use the airport to refuel planes, again, between Israel and the U.S., almost every day. They carry munitions, military technology, all kinds of classified cargo. No one really knows. Their privileges at this airport are to undergo different procedures than any other cargo carriers. The cargo of the Israeli plane are checked on paper only. The airway bills, they never match the actual cargo, assuming anyone really knows the actual cargo is. They even call it the flying the LL way. It became a slogan. Of course, because of the fear of terrorism, you know. The LLA means they could take off and land as they see fit. It's just blatant nonsense. Now, the pilot, as he knew that he was in trouble, he deliberately went into a residential area. Now, why? And Schiphol Air Traffic Control did not want that. He wanted him to go into the water, which, of course, makes a lot of sense. The pilot tried to get back to the airport. Exposed the plane's tail to the winds. Pilot, I don't know, claimed to be, maybe thought he was hit by a missile or something. The plane was in terrible disrepair. Funny thing is, the plane crash was sheer negligence. The bolts that held the engines to the wings, you would think that would be a big priority, you know. But the plane's bolts had suffered so much metal fatigue, that two engines broke off of one wing. The whole thing rolled over. It was uncontrollable. But the deaths began around 48 hours later. Small pets, some birds. There were no birds left in the area. Dogs died. They were all analyzed in laboratories. Clearly they were poisoned. Veterinarians said so. An epidemic grew. Only recently has this really come out. Those survivors, including, you know, policemen and firemen, whatever, medical personnel, first aid workers, ambulance personnel, crane drivers, containers, suppliers, construction workers, mounted police, dogs, horses, army personnel, identification teams, all of them. All different backgrounds, all suffering to this day. Also, there was a series of reported casualties caused by people holding their breath, waiting for Israeli admission of really anything. Any kind of responsibility. They died from that. But about 6 months later, it became very clear what was causing this massive outbreak of serious illnesses. Now, yeah, there's always bandwagoning. You know, it happened with Chernobyl, nonsense, you know. But you can't dismiss them for that reason. The Israelis do. But all the residents, all these groups of people that I mentioned, all complained about the same thing. Unusual fatigue, skin rashes, hair loss, joint pain, nausea, red skin spots. Nephritis, cancer. Yeah, media drives this stuff. sure. But the contents of the plane were certainly capable of these problems. The fact that all these relief workers and all these cops and everything else had the exact same complaint suggests that there was an objective basis to them. But you had professional workers. You had policemen, you had firemen, you had everything else, were not permitted even to see a doctor in the state health system. They were not given a diagnosis. They couldn't see a doctor at all. Now, this can't be something that physicians want. These guys, treating firemen, policemen, others, they were forced to deny or minimize the complaints of their patients. This is not something a good MD wants to do. Serious health problems were not acknowledged, or they were minimized and then became worse. So if you asked any of them, hospitals, physicians, you know, their version of the AMA, whatever, ask them the link between the crash and the health ailments, they were instructed to say, there is no connection with the disaster. And they would say it in a very robotic kind of a way. No one is quite sure if these depleted uranium counterweights were burned up. Are they taken? Are they gone? No one seems to know. They're missing. There was a spokesman for the Dutch government said that these counterweights stay intact during, I suppose, any crash. They couldn't possibly burn in the fire. Now, when I say whether they burn or not, I don't mean if they're capable of burning. They certainly are. Anything's capable of burning. But given their casing and given how solid they are, is it plausible? The Dutch government said there is no possibility whatsoever that people could have inhaled depleted uranium, despite just having said a sentence earlier that they might have burned in the fire, which would suggest you could breathe them in. They hired a company salvaging the remnants of the aircraft. They had their accounts were off the charts. Civil Aviation Authority, U.S. Natural Transportation Safety Board, the FAA, they all knew that the counterweights from the crash plane were not fully recovered. That radiation was very high. You had civilians working on airplanes parked in the same hangar as the damaged plane's parts. And of course, for years, for decades, the Dutch government denied it all. There was a local politician, a nobody, you know, like a selectman or something like that, demanded a full medical, you know, the minute he demanded this full medical investigation, this whole thing was reopened again. The question was whether the local residents could have inhaled depleted uranium at ground zero. And could that be the connection with these inexplicable health problems of the residents there? So the investigation turned out to be an interview with five residents, a couple phone calls with Belmar physicians, and there was a written survey with a much larger cadre of various specialists in the area. No one except for one fireman with a rash, really a nasty rash on his foot due to standing in sludge near the wreck, was diagnosed. From that, to this day, the Jews say, see, it's all anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. Funny thing is, the Amsterdam Research Service on Environmental Protection and Soil Mechanics, this was a group that was, they went in to really try to end the debate once and for all. They lied through their teeth because they would come out and say, look, the radiation here, the uranium here, damaging uranium here, it's below the normal healthy level. Only problem was they had taken samples and only used samples from already remediated soil. 1994, the scientific establishment there, Dutch government, said, oh, I don't know, maybe the DU counterweights may have burned after all. No one knew what anyone was saying. This shows the nature of the scientific establishment. This shows their connection to the state. And we all know why. As a physician in the Balmer area, the main hospital there, noticed something that they had been noticed before. Miscarriages, stillborns, chromosomal aberrations, lots of autoimmune occurring in the area, way above the norm. This was well known, but he was one of the first. Then the Mossad was all over this, so it was very hard for him to say anything. He didn't care. He compiled a full dossier, but not one single health agency responded. There were several other calls for a real health survey, one in 1996. There was only the one fireman patient, so there's really no need for anything else. So they established a hospital in 1999, 7 years after the crash. The questionnaire had to be completed, mostly about personal mental problems. They did everything they could to make sure that nothing ever came out. To this day, no one's quite sure what was in that plane. The people were dying all over the place, and no one remembers. At the time, over there it was, but Israel was hardly ever mentioned. You had people then, from 95 to 99, roughly, even now, questioning the secret flights made by El Al in the days previous and following the disaster. That airport was peppered with journalists. They were dressing up as employees, doing anything they could. They discovered the fraudulent airway bills. Even the flight route, the flight plan, didn't match what eyewitnesses had noticed. Finally, the Dutch government launched a parliamentary inquiry. That started in 1999. What is that? 7 years after. The entire point of the investigation was to refute so-called conspiracy theories. That's what they said. They had a list of 89 of them. And every one of the 89 were basically a variant of whether or not Israel had anything to do with this. Well, within a month, the commission had incredibly invalidated all of them. They eliminated the theory. The plane contained almost 3,300 pounds of DU. Now, since 93, that was pretty much known. That's way too high. Boeing declared that normally a 747 has about 860 pounds of that stuff on it. All right. The cockpit voice recorder, they pretended to claim that that wasn't a problem. None of these were particularly good. They were not particularly logical. Didn't matter. No one's going to read this humongous report. So the newspapers just said, all our problems have been solved. A little problem with the DU counterweights, but otherwise, there's nothing to worry about. One of the commissions here, and this is now like the second major set of hearings, tape was played. El Al operations manager said to the traffic control at the airport, he said, there were many explosives on this plane. There were cartridges, he said. There was poison on this thing. And again, under wraps, promising to cover this up. So what the commission said, the reassuring explanation was that, no, the El Al worker was really talking about the airway bill from New York to Amsterdam, not Amsterdam to Tel Aviv. So, you know, problem solved. The world was undoubtedly reassured. It didn't really matter what they said. It's what the headlines in the paper said. Eventually, the commission established that part of the uranium was burnt up in the fire. The National Health Agency then claimed that the resulting DU particles didn't pose much of a risk. The Dutch government spokesman stated under oath that smoking one cigarette was worse than inhaling DU dust in places like Bosnia and Kosovo. Their final report wasn't, you know, quite as long as the first one. It was much less honest. It was complete manipulation. It was pure perjury by police, aviation, whatever, professional silence, deceit, and Mossad intimidation, all due to the power of the Jews. Prosecution for perjury has been considered at least five times. But up until fairly recently, the Minister of Justice has prevented it under heavy Israeli pressure. No one really accepted this thing in Parliament, but no one really had to resign. There were some threats for it, but no one ever actually had to do it. So the government kind of tried to smooth things over by promising an extensive examination of the health issues. So about 5,000 people applied for medical examinations, but almost 3,000 of them were actually aid workers. Almost 500 were KLM employees that worked in the same hangar as the pieces of the plane. Clearly, there's a lot more going on here. And whatever the issues with the DU and the ailerons and everything else, that really wasn't the issue. It didn't help, but it wasn't the issue. So by 2004, they declared everything closed. Didn't matter who was sick. It was closed. It was over. They have closed the book on the bombing disaster, while still people are suffering. But, you know, that's life as an Israeli client. Residents have never been examined for all the crap that was in that plane. The stuff has been flying overhead for God knows how long. What the hell does Israel need with tons and tons of sarin nerve gas? kerosene as an accelerant, all the other chemicals involved. So, you know, residents, especially with health problems, they had to go to private and commercial laboratories. Many of them with money had to fly to the U.S. And what ended up happening is many of them were swindled by technicians. Who, you know, these people really didn't know. They do all these expensive tests. And some of them weren't even accredited. They didn't know. They weren't paid by health insurance or anything else. As I speak right now, there's LL planes with all this crap flying over Amsterdam with all this classified and secret cargo. 2003, LL, another one, lost part of its body while landing in Amsterdam. The next day, the damaged plane was allowed to take off again. No one even made a safety investigation or inspection. All the time, this crap happens. You would think that, you know, the plane that we're talking about here was so bad off that the engine fell off the wing and then took the other engine along with it. Now, Dekker, who I mentioned before, is a journalist. There were plenty of leaks from Dutch officials. Many people who, you know, had relatives who were affected. The jet definitely carried at least 60 pounds of weapons-grade plutonium. That's the issue. Not necessarily the relatively inert DU. No, this was weapons-grade plutonium, at least 60 pounds. Maybe 7 warheads. Soil samples that have been permitted, especially on the private level. There was definite nuclear weapons technology in that plane, which technically would be illegal. One of the men who uncovered this man named Yoichi Shimatsu. He used to be the journalist, or the assistant editor, then former editor, English language, Japan, Times Weekly in Tokyo. Not the first time that this man has been involved in going after the Israelis on the nuclear issue. This very same man, Shimatsu, in 2011, wrote a series of articles on Fukushima. That was March of 2011 that the so-called meltdown happened. Now, the U.S. knew that Fukushima had weapons-grade uranium and plutonium that were exposed to the atmosphere after that tsunami. But he also argues that Israeli intelligence sabotaged the reactor. Why? Because Japan had loudly come out for a Palestinian state and was willing to pay for it. A real one, not the fake one that, you know, Trump later created. Now, Shimatsu, and this, in other words, this is happening everywhere. Nuclear materials were shipped to the plant in 2007. Now, that came under orders from George Bush and the Israeli Prime Minister Olmert at the time. Now, warheads were stolen from the nuclear weapons facility at the Pantex in Texas, BWXT. Israel transported warheads from the port in Houston, again, big Mossad area, kept the best ones for themselves, while giving the Japanese the older, less stable versions. They had to be further enriched at Fukushima. It was a retired CIA agent, a weirdo mercenary, Roland Vincent Crenabi. I don't know if you guys know him. He was the one who passed the information that the warheads were being transported from Houston and that many of them were defective, at least the ones that were being sent to Japan. Less than a year later, Crenabi was shot dead by Houston police at a traffic stop in 2008. He was going really fast. He wouldn't stop for cops. It was very odd. But at the time, he was tracking a Mossad agent who was smuggling plutonium out of one of the Houston docks for an Israeli nuclear reactor. Now, he owned an intelligence firm, and he was running 40 operatives out of Rome who were tracking money flows from the Israeli mafia into Israel itself. So, of course, he's going to be murdered inexplicably by Houston cops. A very weird situation, though. He wasn't armed. They said he was. He flashed a CIA card. And they made a big deal. Like the CIA denied he worked for them. Well, they do that all the time. Of course you're going to deny. They do that all the time for many agents. But this is what Shimatsu also said. 20 minutes before the Fukushima's plant's meltdown, Israel was so enraged with Japanese support of Palestine that it infected the plant's computers with the Stuxnet virus, which hampered its shutdown. And there was fallout from the section of the plant housing that very uranium and plutonium received from the warheads from Houston supplied in 2007. I don't have to tell it though, the massive cover up there. Now, sometimes people report 3 reactors suffered meltdowns. Meltdowns are very, you know, I am somewhat of a fan of nuclear energy. The only real disasters happen when they're forced to happen, like this. Or the mythology about Chernobyl. Japanese authorities rated the disaster at level 4. That's on the international scale. Outside experts said it was a 7, which is the highest one. In 2009, after Shimatsu exposed the entire warheads thing, they were secretly moved to Japan. The International Atomic Energy Agency issued a warning to Japan not to abandon its anti-nuclear weapons policy. Now, I want to quote a guy. It's a pen name for a major New York and D.C. Journalist. He uses the name Richard Walker. He writes for the American Free Press that I used to work for. He says this. He says the IAEA had to know that Japan had long retained the potential for building nuclear weapons. Well, of course, it's a first world country. That was made clear back in 1996. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs document exposed how Japan had been promoting a dual strategy in respect to nuclear weapons since the 60s. It would often publicly profess a non-nuclear policy while maintaining the ability to build a nuclear arsenal. The Liberal Democratic Party, long dominated Japanese politics up until recently, always said that there was no constitutional impediment to nuclear weapons. Yeah, there's nothing, really, that's not saying a whole lot. Any first world country could build a nuclear weapon in, 2 minutes. That's really not the issue. Today, of course, because of the so-called Russian and Chinese threat, no one's really worried about this. And they're pushing Japan to, Japan's been armed to the teeth for a long time, but possibly, South Korea's been threatening to do this too. I've been through that, many years ago over the General Park concern. But the Bush-Cheney White House and everything afterwards, China was the main thing. So pushing Japan as a counterweight, so to speak, to the Chinese threat, this is where the nuclear weapons issue may still arise here. Japan could very easily have a nuclear, South Korea could, any first world country could do it, no problem. So from Japan to Amsterdam, Gaza, Houston, Israel is a terrorist cult state that today is on its last legs. Anyway, the Japanese issue is just one and the same issue. But like in Japan, the documents from the LL officials of Balmer have all disappeared. I mentioned this, all the police tapes, all the videotapes. Firemen said, we turned in the black box. Government denies it was ever turned in. Just like at 9/11, metal parts from the records have been recycled, melted down, no investigation. Residents claimed all the same black helicopters landing in their neighborhood. A group told of an English-speaking team, some clad in these protective suits. They carried a heavy box with a white cloth. They had pictures of it. Dutch authorities say it never happened. To this day, these secret flights continue over that city and many others. As I mentioned before, the issue is that they're using civilian airports, not NATO air bases. Every Sunday especially, now these are always going on, but every Sunday especially, LL cargo plane stops at Schiphol, refueling midway on the journey between New York and Tel Aviv. All of this cargo is put inside a vacuum chamber. An underground bunker to test for, bombs equipped with altimeter triggers. But none of this appears on an airport video monitor. There's not even a check-in desk from LL. My old friend, Chris Bolin, we used to work together at the American Free Press. He wrote back in 2002, I want to quote him directly here. And this just reiterates a lot of what I've already said. It took 6 years before the Dutch newspaper, the Handelsblad, revealed the true contents of the crashed plane. Hilbauer, senior editor with the Dutch Volkskrant newspaper, he lives a mile from Balmer and was one of the first reporters on the scene. He said, I've been in Biafra, I've been in Vietnam, I've never seen anything like this crash. It's like looking into a steel smelter. The concrete of the flats was glowing red. Now, Bolden continues. He says, tapes of phone conversations between LL and traffic control reveal even more intense collusion. He then repeats what I mentioned about the poison, and I'm going to cover this up. But Hilbauer told the American Free Press, he said, these people don't work for LL. They're all from Shin Bet. They're paid by the Israeli embassy. The Israelis run the airport like a little hafia. So the so-called controllers? No, they're not controllers. They're Shin Bet agents. So everyone up until this point, you're talking about controllers, saying we're going to cover this up. They're not controllers. The same Attorney General of Rockin said all the security in this area, at this airport, is pure Mossad. Nothing gets done without their okay. So Chris Bolin, when he was with the American Free Press, I was there at the same time. I think I must have been. He called up the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. That's at The Hague. And he asked them directly about the Schiphol incident and the components for chemical weapons and nuclear weapons. The man he got in contact with was named Peter Kaiser from the same organization. Now, he claimed that he wasn't familiar with the details of the Flight 1062, despite it being his job. But he said that Israel was a non-member. Now, get this. Israel's a non-member that has signed but not ratified the treaty, the chemical weapons treaty. Somehow, it was still obliged to respect the convention. Now, I don't know how one signs but doesn't ratify a treaty. I thought signing was ratifying the treaty. Anyway, Bolin continues. He says, Israel has never admitted purchasing or producing chemical or biological weapons, and because it's not a member state of the CWC, it's not required to divulge what chemical weapons it has or accept inspectors. However, a member state like the U.S. is forbidden from providing a non-member state like Israel chemical weapons or precursor chemicals like DMMP. The Israeli government finally compelled to admit the jet had been carrying 50 gallons of that very same substance. The fact that the IIBR or the destination of the cargo indicates this shipment was to create a huge amount of sarin for something. God knows what. Uzni Manamani of the Times, I think it's New York Times, said the Israel assault aircraft crews have been trained to fit an active chemical or biological weapon within minutes of receiving the command of attack. The weapons are manufactured at the Institute for Biological Research in the suburb of Nes Zion. In other words, on this point, the Zionist entity was building an entire nuclear arsenal that then could be, chemical arsenal. Usually using sarin gas, that can be fitted to any piece of armor, armored helicopter, anything like that. Really anything that could shoot. This was going to be used, we could only assume, against Gaza or the West Bank or wherever. Now, I've not read anything where this is being used systematically, but they didn't care. They were actually going to do this. Now, normally, DMP is really heavy, stringent export controls. Now, John Swanker, I can't pronounce his last name, Swanciger. He used to be the executive vice president for the Solkatronic firm I mentioned already. He said that the firm applied for and received required Department of Commerce export licenses. Not once, but twice. I mentioned this already, that once the consignment was destroyed, once they destroyed in Amsterdam, and once the export regulations were even tightened, it didn't make any difference. Anything that they lost was immediately replaced. He said that Israel's the only foreign country to have ordered DMMP from his firm, because there's no use for it. There's no need for it, unless you are talking about genocide. Why in heaven's name would Israel need tons and tons of sarin gas, on top of the tons that it already has? Not to mention the nuclear materials. I think the entire depleted uranium was a deflection. Given everything else I've just said, there were actual real chemical weapons grade materials on that plane, and hence all the other planes. And when you attach that to what the Japanese journalists discovered coming out of Houston, the murder of the CIA agent, you have Israel. Back in it wasn't that long ago, but it was maybe 20 years ago. 1997, I mentioned this already, the Hamas leader in Jordan. I talked about the secret, the 6-foot-high concrete wall sensors. 6 installation employees have been killed in work accidents. There's so many work accidents in these things, the Pennsylvania companies. You know, I mentioned how Netanyahu has gone to war prior to the war starting here in Gaza against the Supreme Court and really the judiciary in general. Well, the Supreme Court went after Netanyahu, went after the IIBR. In fact, the locals, they're all Jews, in this zone, they don't want this place here, obviously. They obtained a Supreme Court injunction barring the IIBR, this poison weapons center, from expanding the another 6 hectares of land on its grounds because it poses an obvious catastrophic public health hazard. And it all connects. This is why, one of the many reasons Netanyahu went after the Supreme Court, allowing the president, allowing even parts of the Knesset to override it whenever it needs to. I mentioned before why it didn't go into the water. The water was right there. It's interesting. The pilot rejected many demands by the air traffic control, whoever they were, to attempt an emergency landing in the direction of the nearby Izmir Lake. Instead, he deliberately went for a Schiphol, knowing full well that this was a very crowded area. He did it on purpose. See, the thing is, DMMP apparently reacts furiously with water. The Israelis claim that that would have been far worse than smashing into an apartment building. Sure. God knows how many Goyim were murdered to protect Israel's secrets. Well, Netanyahu, who actually was running things at the time, his media advisor named David Bar-Ilan went after Handel's blood and the story and everything else. Denied that it carried sarin precursors and all that. It was all a lie. However, the Defense Ministry of Israel said the flight was carrying no dangerous goods, but this statement only concerns cargo intended for the Ministry of Defense. Whatever that means. It's very kind of a cryptic statement. The depleted uranium was somewhat of a... this is why the Israelis exaggerated how much was on it. Major study is still being done to show what role the nerve gas ingredients affected people, because they're still being affected to this day, let alone the nuclear material. It's not the depleted uranium. It's the actual nuclear weapons-grade material that was on that jet that's causing the problems. All these years later, being held in secret. Report in June 1998, tried to minimize everything. All groups, you know, the eyewitnesses still say there were numerous groups, some French, some British, probably all of them Mossad, involved in the removal of evidence. Because there is a full Mossad station at the airport. Just a few years ago, the Dutch TV program went over this again. Statements from LL employees at the Frankfurt airport that they were always tampering with documents on behalf of their superiors. Omegam, which is an engineering firm, also investigated the crash site. They discovered extensive traces of tributylphosphate, TBB. Hundreds of gallons must have been on board. Now, this was, you know, a fairly common industrial chemical, but it's also used to recycle uranium and plutonium from spent fuel rods. This is something that Mordecai Vanunu brought up. Of course, it's nowhere to be found in any flight document, let alone 1062. The inquiry did deal with Israel's refusal to provide full and timely information. This was a problem. 44,000 pounds of cargo. To this day, we don't know what it is. Not to mention the Dutch government's servitude to Israel, forcing it to lie consistently, refusing medical care to people because, you know, there's nothing to worry about. Whatever the case, the Schiphol Airport, and God knows where else, it's a key transit point for the strategic military goods routinely flown by LL from New York to Tel Aviv. They can have all the inquiries they want. I think it should be reopened because things have changed. See, LL and Mossad, they have no real jurisdiction as the world. Dutch authorities will ask no questions. They will monitor nothing. Today, maybe that's the case. Everything has been ignored, except now, by Radio Albion 30 years later. Right after the disaster, by the way, right afterwards, The Hague was chosen as the seat of the UN Organization of Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. Right afterwards, in pretty much the same place. Saddam Hussein was always a diversion. It was always a deflection and a projection. Final conclusion, 350-page cover-up report released in 1999. El Al, of course, was let off the hook, officially. Some of the most absurd writing in Dutch political history. There, it's in English, of course. And it really ends with the more or less the statement, how could we have ever distrusted Israel for more than a second? This is absolutely disgusting. I vaguely remember this. I didn't realize how bad it was. The Mossad connection, the Japan connection. This is the stuff that Michael Collins Piper used to do full time. He's been gone a long time now. I have the feeling this is just the beginning. And now is the time for all of this stuff to be reopened. Thank you everyone for listening. I will talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.